Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Universe podcast. I am your host Leo, here with my co-host Charlotte.
Hello.
And our guest today, Florentina.
Hello.
Hello everybody. Florentina, this is your first time on the podcast. So if you could please introduce yourself to our listeners, that would be great.
Hi, my name is Florentina. I'm a student of English. I'm interested in English literature, especially modernism, and I like to write, mostly poetry, but I'm also writing prose.
It's a good introduction. You're reading one of your poems today.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's called Birds at Night. Why don't we start with the poem?
Okay, yeah, sure, why not? Birds at Night. Night is getting closer, as I still remain. Lying on my sofa, waking not in vain. Of wildest dreams they sing to me, no sooner I am gone. To a land of thousand springs, of colours and of dawn. A reverie so sweet and bright, up in this meadow near, I almost thought I saw the light, the golden rays quite cheer. In this state I revel here, in charming company. For my ear they did endear with tender irony.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Charlotte and I were discussing before whether we'd heard this poem before. Have you ever read it at the Universe meetings? You have?
Yes, sometime in April, but there were only about 7 people at the meeting.
Okay.
Actually, this was the first poem I ever read at the Universe.
Oh, nice.
And I wrote a continuation of it, a second poem called Lilacs and Fall, and there were more people present when I read that poem.
Okay, so, okay. Yeah. It's good we're having every week or every podcast episode we're having, what seems we're having some kind of harkening back to first experiences with the Universe. Last week we had Philip on here who told us, who actually read the poem he'd written at the poetry picnic where he was recruited for the Universe.
Yeah.
And today you're reading the first poem you ever presented at the Universe. I think that's really nice, yeah. So, Charlotte, you had a lot of questions.
Well, yeah, I mean, your poem just inspired me so much, so, yeah.
Thank you.
I was wondering, that's a semantic question, you mentioned that land of thousand springs, what is that? Where is that? Is that a place? Is that, does it have any meaning?
Well, I probably should start with my inspiration for the poem, because it kind of explains that it was one... evening in spring this year when I sat in my room and the window was open and it was not yet dusk, but the sun was about to set and I heard the birds sing outside and it really felt like a spring morning and not at all like a dusk coming closer and it was such a contradiction in a way, but a good one. I like to work with contradictions in general, but it was such a unique feeling that I had to write about it. And as far as the land of thousand spring goes, what I wanted to imply with it is just this stereotypical spring morning with the birds singing outside the window and waking up to that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because for me it kind of had the notion of a real like a country, a real land where it's spring all the time and there's springtime all the time and you wake up and there's another spring and you wake up and there's another spring.
I did want to create some distance to the reality and the here and now, I guess, with the entire poem.
Okay.
Because it felt surreal, the whole situation really.
The poem also gives a very... gives off a very surreal aura in a way, and what I thought of this line of the thousand spring, my association was dreams, because springs and there's things springing forth from dreams, that was my association kind of.
I think the whole poem could be interpreted as a reverie in general. To me it wasn't, but I'm totally fine if someone reads that into the poem, and I think there's something dreamy about the entire poem, mm-hmm. actually about a lot of my poems in general, mm-hmm. so that isn't far-fetched.
There's also not really anything you can do about people reading anything into your poems. It's not really in your power, sadly. Sometimes you'd wish some interpretations just say no.
Yes, I mean that. And sometimes I just really want to explain my train of thoughts and yeah. Of course, I'm not always able to.
Sure, because at least for me, I can only guess from my own experience, there isn't always a specific train of thought behind every single line, or is there for you?
No, not with most poems. With some of the shorter ones, probably, some of the four-liners, but apart from that, probably not. Yeah.
It just feels right.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I usually edit my poetry before reading it at the universe, but even if I insert some lines or delete some lines, there's usually still this kind of continuation without any kind of abstraction or giving it too much thought, really. Every line, I mean.
I really like that you talk about night, but then again about bright light. So there's, first of all, a nice rhyme, but also I kind of like that contrast between darkness in the night and light at night. I find that really, really beautiful because it kind of also kind of gave me the feeling that the poem ends on a hopeful note. But then again, there was this part about the irony, and I was like, maybe it's bittersweet. It ends bittersweet, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that the reader should decide for him or herself. From my point of view, it ends on a positive note, and I don't mean irony or the whole light, bright and night thing as something bad, not at all. I just like to play with contrasts, and I like to call them impossibilities, but they're probably more of unlikelihoods. That's something I like to continue throughout my other poems.
Because actually, if you went up to the north, like Norway or Finland, at springtime or even like in June, you would have a night with light because
the sun doesn't set. Experienced that in the northern parts of Scotland even.
Oh wow, yeah. Amazing, okay. So that kind of, it's also this feeling that you get when you read this. It's like they're birds and they kind of take away the light, they take away the darkness and bring you the light and the happiness. That's something that I...
That's what we usually think. Usual meaning. Sure.
What I really like about birds in summer is that they often start singing before you can even notice yourself that dawn is coming. True. For you, it's still darkness, but they've already sensed it somehow. That's just about to happen and they're starting to sing.
Totally.
Really excited, and then you also know that it's just about to happen.
Yes.
Also, your poem gave me a sense of yearning. I don't know what for, but I read it and I was really wistful afterwards. And I really like that. I really like it when poetry can give me such feelings or make me feel something like that. So I was wondering, what do you feel when you read it? What did you feel when you were writing it?
That's a difficult question. I should probably also explain that this poem was a turning point in my writing, and it was the first time I kind of acknowledged that I may be better at writing poetry than prose, because at that point I was trying to write prose and failing. I always incorporated rhymes and rhythms into my prose back then, and some of those things I turn into prose poems later on, but I never wanted to be a poet actually, and then this poem happened to me in a way, and It changed everything. It changed my outlook on my own writing.
Mm-hmm.
And as for the feeling I had when I was writing this, it, for the first time, it felt right to write a poem
mm-hmm.
rather than a short story. And it was a state of, an abstract state of kind of in between reality and reverie that was very much reality though. Yes, I don't really know.
So kind of, yeah, but that's kind of, I think, what I tried to put into words but couldn't, was this strange feeling of wanting to arrive and having arrived but not having arrived yet, something weird like that.
Something in between, isn't it?
Which is what I called yearning, but I don't know.
No, that's a good word to describe it.
I really like the phrase, the poem happened to you.
Yeah, me too.
Because even though, I know, it's, you know, writing poetry can also, you know, it requires skill and training and talent, probably, and, you know, that's, in a sense, can be work sometimes, but often what it feels like is the poem happening to you.
Yes.
I think that's a really nice phrase.
Thanks. Yeah, I with poetry, much rather than prose, I often have the feeling that it is just a distinct feeling or a situation that would be just be worth to put into words, but only a few, lines, and sometimes there's just a line or several words popping up in my mind, and I have to write that down, otherwise I'll forget it pretty soon.
Mm.
But by now, ideas usually enter my head in a rhythm and oftentimes even with rhymes and, yeah.
So you're basically training your thinking to come up with these phrases already ready-made as poets,
poem stock. It's not really, it's not as if I was doing that intentionally,
yeah.
But my brain somehow adapts and I mean I'm reading a lot more prose than poetry, but nevertheless the poetry I do read affects me greatly and affects the way the ideas shape in my head.
I was wondering if you read any poetry, and which you just said you did, and if so, then if there is a poet or multiple poets who influence your writing.
Yes, definitely. Sometimes too much so. My favorite poet is Emily Dickinson.
Mm.
And I'm currently reading her collected poems.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she wrote about 1,775.
I know.
Yeah.
But they were published posthumous, right? I think
yeah,
she was
exactly.
Already...
She only published about 10. Yeah, her sister Lavinia.
In her notebook, I think.
Actually, it's a really interesting story because she told her sister to burn the poems after her death,
mm-hmm.
and her sister decided against it.
Yeah. Luckily.
Yeah, fortunately. Yeah, she published only about 10 poems during her lifetime, and I don't know why it is that exactly her poetry speaks to me the way it does, but in terms of form, something she wrote quite frequently were poems with 8 lines, with the 2nd and 4th, the 6th and the 8th line rhymes, and that's something I also really like to do. And concerning literature in general, I'm a bit torn between romanticism and modernism, and I think because although she's officially a romantic poet, she's also somewhere in between. There's some aspects of modernism. She did revolutionize poetry in a way. And because there's this in-betweenness in my reading and writing in general, my views on literature, I think that combines very well, and that also translates into my writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also really like the topics she wrote about, like immortality and the witty contradictions, and there are just many things about her poetry that I also like to do in my own writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you're you're fond of the formal elements in her poetry, and you said you like to also adapt them. How do you reconcile those formal elements with the poem just happening to you? Or does the poem happen to you already completely, you know, perfect in form and rhyme?
Definitely not, no. I mean, in the case of this poem, Birds at Night, I think it mostly did in terms of rhymes and rhythm. But usually there's a string of words that enter my head, and usually I begin with that as the first line, and it's usually already in a rhythm. Then the second line just also happens, and the second line is usually not that hard to think of, and from there on it demands more work, and oftentimes I do have an idea, but I need to rephrase it and make a rhythm and find a word that rhymes with the other words. And yeah, I think I do view rhymes as something not as necessary as I did in the beginning when I started out writing poetry. And by now I've written a few poems that don't rhyme at all, but it took me a while to get to that point. And I do prefer rhymes still.
Okay.
My relationship with contemporary poetry is a bit strained, and I tend to like 19th century poetry.
Okay. You say in the poem that you almost saw the light. It kind of tripped me up because it's a conventional metaphor for passing away, seeing the light. And I didn't think that this was what you mean. And platitudes is always something to avoid in a poem, but I find it very interesting if you use a platitude but don't use the platitude in, you know, its accustomed and usual meaning, but, you know, give it a new spin, kind of. I think that's really cool.
I never thought of that, actually. And no, I didn't mean it in the sense of passing away at all. No, death is something I don't mean to mention and signify in this poem, actually. I think what I mean by I almost thought I saw the light is that it's more of a reference to a reverie and the state of in-betweenness and yearning again.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm going to direct in the direction of, but being not quite there yet.
Mm-hmm. I think something you said before, Charlotte, was also quite poignant. I think you said something about yearning, but not knowing what you're yearning for.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know that feeling, and it's really, it's super weird because it's painful and nice at the same time.
Yeah,
because yearning is not a bad feeling in itself. It's just, yeah, it's weird. So you started your career, so to speak, as a poet. It's a monumental point in your oeuvre as an artist. If we want to put it into grand, this is how it's going to be on your Wikipedia page one day.
I hope so. Oh, yeah.
Have you always written in English, or is there, or was there also another monumental point when you change languages?
Well, first of all, I've always liked to write, and I was always interested in literature, but particularly English literature. And even before I could read any of the classics in English, I read the German translations. So it was kind of natural to go into that direction, but I wrote some bits and pieces in German before I started writing in English. Mm-hmm. But that came naturally, actually.
Okay.
Because it was always English literature that fascinated me the most.
And do you only write in English now, or do you also sometimes write in German?
No, I generally don't write in German. I don't particularly like it.
It's so weird, right? It's so weird.
English just feels so much more natural for this kind of output, for this kind of self-expression, artistic writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel the same. It's really weird to write in German. You've never... Well, I have done it as a kid, but ever since I write this kind of writing, I don't know, I write English.
I think English is just such a poetic language in itself. It just flows.
Yes,
it's exactly. Just there and it flows, and you can put it into any kind of shape you want and it fits. And German is...
It's such a harsh language in my opinion.
It's just big. It's very big, and when you try to put it into a shape, it doesn't want to fit.
You have to be, I think in Germany you do have to be really good at poetry. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rilke sure can make German sound
like beautiful,
beautiful and flowing, but you know, if you all know Rilke, it's going to be a difficult task.
I'm sometimes so much awe when I read translations of English literature into German, and the German translation is top-notch. I'm like, wow, kudos to these translators, because that's really hard work.
Yes.
But I do feel that writing in... I mean, I think writing in English is easier because it just flows so much, and I can always say it's more distant from me. But I think writing in German is, for me, in some ways, the moment when I say, okay, I can't chicken out now, this is kind of me and I have to put everything in there. Kind of, it's more conscious, I think. And when with English, it's just like, da 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 da, just flows, like a river, like music in the background.
I never made the distinction that differentiation for me depends on whether what I'm writing prose or poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, prose is so much more strenuous to write. And I'm still trying to get into the habit of writing short stories regularly. I've got loads of ideas, but it's so much harder to sit down and write it.
Mm-hmm.
And with poetry, you're usually done within an hour, and the ideas just enter your head, and there's not as much planning involved.
Yeah, I get that. I talked about that with Magdalena today from Trapez,
because
we're in the same course today. And it's really weird because poetry is just, it's really good because you don't have to do any planning. There's no, there's no arc to a poem. There's no different characters. There's no character at all that you need to consider. Because the poem, what's being said in the poem, is the character itself.
Mm-hmm.
But then, for me, that's why I can't write prose. But then there is people like Magdalena who also write prose and not just poetry, who have kind of both of those sides.
Exactly. Usually, I mean, not with my really, really long stories, but with novels, I mean, okay, they have to be planned, because at some point, if you don't plan, you get into a problematic situation. But with short stories, I've often been in the situation that they just happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, this poem happened, and I didn't plan anything ahead. And this is kind of the situation that I like the most, because I just get into the flow, and I have an idea, and I sit down, and I write it, and then I'm done, and I don't know, 1 or 2 hours, and I have this perfect story, and it usually stays the way it came out of me, because that's usually... When I show it to people, they're like, but come on, this is like your edited version, right? You edited that several times, and then I said, sorry, that's just how it came out of me, and they're like, okay, I have to edit my work a lot to get it into that shape, and then I said, sorry,
that was a humble brag.
No, I'm just kind of...
It's fine. You can humble brag on this program. This is a humble bragging friendly program.
I don't mean to brag. It's just that I tried to kind of... I'm lost for words now because I'm so tired probably. Wiedergeben?
Reply, no.
To repeat what people told me or situations that I've been in where I received that kind of interaction and where people actually often have been kind of hostile to me because they said,
hostile.
That's not how you're supposed to write. Writing means editing, and if you don't edit, you can't call yourself a writer. And I was like, what? Okay. Everybody.
Where do you meet those people?
I have no idea. Don't ask.
So I know what places to avoid.
Okay, first of all, that sounds horrible. Secondly, I think in the end, everybody has to find their own way how to write and how to make that work for themselves. And yes, I edit pretty much everything, even most of my poetry, because I think that it's gives it more refinement, and I really do sometimes think of better ways to put something, or I might want to add a stanza, but yeah, in the end, I think it only really matters whether you can work that way or...
Exactly. I mean, everybody has their own process.
Yes, exactly. And I'm still trying to figure out my process with prose.
Mm-hmm.
With poetry, I've been trying to experiment a bit more. And, for instance, writing poems that don't rhyme and making harsh breaks and using exclamation marks or no commas and...
getting to modernism.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I should move forward even with my poetry, even though I know that it will probably always be heavily influenced by romanticism.
But I mean, you said that you're still considering writing prose, or that you're actively doing it, and then I'm wondering why not stick with one, or why do you want to do both? Because you said you're actually more of a poet than a prose writer.
I am more of a poet than prose writer, but that's really not something I asked for being a poet. That's the way I felt at the beginning. Like, oh, why did this happen to me? That's not something I ever aspired to be. And for the longest time, I asked myself why people were still writing poetry in the 21st century. Yeah, then I ended up writing poetry myself. I read really a lot more prose than poetry, and partly it's that I still do like prose, and I want to write prose and write good short stories or even novels at some point. I mean, I'm not there yet, but at some point in the future, maybe. And there are some ideas of mine that just won't really translate into a poem.
I see.
I mean, I'd be happy to write longer poems with plots and in blank verse or whatever, like Aurora Leigh by Elizabeth Barrett Browning. I'm just reading it currently, it's quite interesting. But I think that format is pretty much dead in the 21st century and irrelevant, so what's the use in writing it?
Interesting question. I mean, when I think of a story in a poem, the most famous poem coming to mind is Goethe's Erlkönig.
Okay.
And I think that poem is still very relevant. Because, I mean, maybe just because it's so famous and everybody learns it in school and it's kind of like the poem that we know. But also, I think it just is brilliant. I think it is a really brilliant piece of writing. And then when you look at other poems that Goethe wrote, they're just... I really find them brilliant. I mean, I haven't read that many, but the ones that I know. So I guess they can stay relevant.
They can, but I think epic poems or just longer poems with plot in general are very much a thing of the past, mostly 19th century. And I can't imagine who would want to publish something like that nowadays.
We will. The universe will.
I wouldn't be too quick to call any kind of genre of poetry dead, because it only takes, you know, one new spin, one new aspect to what you're doing, and it all, you know, it's so unpredictable. Everything might happen, I think.
But if you look at contemporary poetry, I mean, I know that I don't view it in a very positive light in general, but there are certain tendencies to not stick to strict rhythm or rhymes, and wouldn't it be to some extent either a revival or a step back to even to go back and use those
yeah.
methods?
Yeah, especially with the formal aspects. But I think longer poems that also have a plot, even if they don't have the proper format or rhymes or anything, still have potential. I'm thinking of a modern version of Robert Frost poems, for instance. His poems sometimes they read like a bit like a more poetic kind of novel when it's two characters engaging about an issue.
And I'm sure there's plenty of these things. I just think they are not as famous as other things, but that doesn't mean that they are not being published.
Well, I did some research on the topic.
Okay.
And
I'm an expert here.
No, I wouldn't call myself an expert on the topic, but I mean, when it comes to, let's just call it the epic poems for now, there are some really famous ones from the 19th century, and the latest really famous one I can think of is The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot.
Mm-hmm.
After that, kind of gets darker and obscure, and there's not really much in that format that's actually well known.
But still, that doesn't mean that it's not being published.
True, but there's no way of knowing what's out there that has not been published until now.
I know, but in philosophy, there's a branch that calls itself logics, and in logics, there are two kinds of assumptions that you can make. One of them is called induction, and that basically says that you can never falsify something by saying, okay, I saw one black swan, therefore all swans must be black.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of the same thing we're doing now, because we can't know if a poem like this is not being published. I mean, or just because one isn't being published, we don't know if all of them are being published.
It's the Popper metaphor, isn't it?
Maybe.
He at least uses the metaphor. I don't know if he came up with it, but yeah. You can't say if there's not a black swan out there somewhere.
Exactly. And when you see one, the opposite is just because you saw one doesn't mean that all swans are black.
Mm-hmm.
True. But I think we only can really talk about the things that have been published, because there's really no way of knowing what's out there.
Sure. I think Charlotte and I are just being a bit nitpicky.
Yeah, also, I'm just saying, I wouldn't want you to limit yourself just because you think this is never ever going anywhere. Because if you want to write a poem like that, just do.
If it happens to you, it happens.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It hasn't happened yet, and I'm not in that situation yet, so I don't have to give it that much thought yet, but just in general, when I did some research on Aurora, just the fact that I only came across it because I read an essay Virginia Woolf's mm-hmm. about it, and that it's not really mentioned anywhere, even though it's really brilliant, speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's a masterpiece of the Victorian period.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like an issue might be that we've lost this kind of oral element that you had, especially in epic poetry, where it was, you know, came out of a long tradition of, I suppose, ballads and folk tradition. We don't really have that anymore, but I am hopeful, because I have a real feeling that the oral and interpersonal component to art, especially in poetry, is coming back with all of this poetry slamming and stuff like that. I think that's, it's not, you know, it's not sitting around a campfire, but it is us again going places, leaving our homes,
mm-hmm.
and sitting in front of people and listening to their stories. And if I go on YouTube and look at some of the slam poetry pieces you find up there, they are telling stories, mm-hmm. just not, you know, in the old format, but it's still, it is storytelling, it is humans connecting over poetry, and I think that's really nice.
That's an interesting thought. I never really thought of it that way, poetry slams, but yes, that may actually be true, and I think that's a good thing, that would be a good thing if it actually happens. Yeah. It doesn't need to be campfire, does it?
Mm.
I mean,
not really. No.
I think that might have been the original idea of poetry slams, or maybe that still is how they are being kind of done in other countries. But around here, in my opinion, I mean, I've seen my fair share of poetry slams. I've been to a fair share of them. I only participated once, but never. That's beside the point. I think they are mostly centered on the performance part and not so much on the poetry part, which I find rather sad, because often texts or poems that were brilliant don't even get into the second round because they weren't performed as kind of extrovertly as the other texts that lacked in quality, but because the performance was so kind of, out there, or the person was, I don't know, jumping around and doing tricks, people voted that person to get into the next round instead of voting for the person who just read their poem, which was brilliant.
Okay, I've never been to poetry slam. I'd love to go to one, but yeah.
That's unfortunately kind of the vibe that I usually took away from it. Usually the person who won wasn't the person with the best text, but usually was the person who kind of was most out there.
Yeah, and a good performer.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Which, for me, is beside the point, because then just call yourself an actor and go to acting school.
Well, I mean, the performance is always a big part of... It's not called performing a piece for no reason.
Yes, but if you perform a piece, then perform a piece that is brilliant and good, and don't kind of hide away the fact that you're not as good at writing as at performing. That's my issue.
But there are several days to poetry slamming, and I feel that performance and acting is just a big part of it. Should it be purely about the writing aspect of it?
No, but the quality of texts that have won the times when I watched the poetry slams were, to me, really, really hurtful, because these texts were just such platitudes, most of them.
Okay, that's not a good
thing. They were just entertaining and funny on a superficial level, and that was it. There was nothing more to them. And they won because they were like, ha 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 ha, funny, and because the person who delivered them in an entertaining and brilliant manner. On kind of, a more subtle note, texts that were actually brilliant but weren't performed the same way never got anywhere to the finishing line.
Okay, yeah, that's sad, because it's a form of literature, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of
it. It should still be part of it, or, most important part of it, really.
Also,
it's the base, the text.
Yeah, and usually sad or thoughtful texts also never make it because people want to be entertained. And that's also something that I thought that
perhaps sad texts or thoughtful texts could be thought-provoking and emotional. Couldn't they be delivered that way? But
that's exactly the thing. A performance like that never wins against a performance of somebody who has a very funny, entertaining text, who's like the entertainer who says, "I'm here, come on, I'm your entertainment for tonight." And that's my issue with poetry slamming, at least the ones that I saw. I only saw some in Vienna, but there I went to multiple different ones, and they all had the same. It was the same experience for me everywhere.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I know that in the States or in the UK, they do it differently. There are YouTube videos of people who won and who had like brilliant, thoughtful texts, and they just delivered them in that way, and then they won, which is really nice because that would be something that I would really like and appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But around here, it's kind of, about entertainment.
Is it always a competition?
Yes. As far as I know, yes.
Mm.
They kind of say the person with the loudest applause wins, which is sometimes really hard to say because sometimes it's just, if you bring 20 of your closest friends, I don't know, your applause will be louder than other people's, of course, so it's kind of,
Yes, of course, but isn't there usually a topic, an overall topic for a poetry slam?
Not always, sometimes.
Okay, because it just seems unfair to me to compare funny texts to really sad, moving ones, and because they're two different things, aren't they?
Exactly, but I think that would be a really good idea, actually, but I've never actually seen a themed poetry slam. I always had a mixture. Some had one guy once read a text that I really liked. It was just questions that he asked the audience.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was questions like, when did you call your grandparents just for no reason the last time? Or when did you do something nice for someone just because you wanted to, without asking for anything in return? And questions like that. And it was really good because I was starting to think, I should call my grandparents again, or I don't know, hold the door open for someone, for a random stranger, just because I can. But again, he didn't win.
Okay.
Maybe we should organize our own poetry event where we do all the things, or we don't do all the things that annoy Charlotte about poetry events in general.
Yeah.
Let's call it the poetry slam not to annoy Charlotte.
Poetry a la Charlotte. It's like an Italian restaurant's menu.
Oh yes, please, let's do that. You kind of alluded to it, but you didn't give a definite statement on how long you've been writing or if you've always been writing.
I've been writing for most parts of my life, not always. There were some pauses in between, but from an early age on I was interested in literature and like to write myself. But when I was younger, I didn't really have concentration enough to sit down and finish something.
Mm-hmm.
Then in my teenage years, I mostly just wrote kind of letters that just retold experiences. And then around the age of 16, 17, there was this urge to write fiction. And to finish it, actually. It's something I've been meaning to do for several years now. And I always took up projects and abandoned them. And it's okay that I didn't finish some of the stuff because it was quite bad in the beginning. But I started to take writing seriously about a year ago only.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, I didn't really have enough motivation to sit down regularly because I didn't have the platform to share it and to get criticism. And again, I tried to force myself to write prose, which didn't work out for me. And only when I joined the universe last spring did I acknowledge that I was perhaps better off as a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I've been writing poetry almost obsessively. I had such a creative burst after that. And
ooh, nice.
Yeah. I wrote quite a lot of poetry in summer month, which was really nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I've also experienced writer's block quite recently, but yeah. Happens to everybody.
Yeah, it does.
I just tell myself that there are periods where I'm just not creative and I have to accept that.
But sometimes...
And then they pass and I'm creative again and then I can write again.
But sometimes it's really good to push through that and get yourself to edit something at least.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my experience, it really helped me. And sometimes I was really productive and had new ideas after a while.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to sit down and fight that first urge of, well, my brain is empty, I don't know what to write. There are absolutely no words I can use.
Mm. If I only had the time to do some editing, push through this.
It's something I'm neglecting as well.
Yeah.
I sat down yesterday evening and tried to edit some stuff, which I actually did, but yeah, I haven't been doing that in quite some time.
Mm. Yeah, but it's also just not fun.
Sometimes it is.
I have to admit, I don't like it.
I mean, sometimes some of my shorter poems are floating around my head constantly, and sometimes the editing process is the same as first having an idea for a poem, and all of a sudden there's one line or two lines or something I want to change about it. I mean, one, two lines that I want to add. And with some of my poetry, I'm stuck kind of in the middle of a poem, and I'm still waiting for that moment to happen, to know where to take that poem, to which turn to give it, how I want it to be, how I want it to sound like. With some poems, it hasn't happened until now, and sometimes it doesn't happen for a month. But, yeah.
That might be the difference, because I usually think that stories I write after I finish them, that they're finished.
Really? I almost never think of my writing that way. It's always a continuum, something that's not entirely ended.
I mean, it has changed with my English stories. I think since English is not my mother tongue, I have to acknowledge that I don't know everything and that sometimes there is room for improvement. But with my German texts, I'm sometimes even so stubborn that I don't want to accept any criticism, because I say, for me, this is perfect and it has to stay like this. And then either people accept it or they don't.
Okay.
And then either we fight or we don't.
As you've heard here, editing is difficult. It's not always the thing you want to do, but edit your texts. Because if you edit your texts, you can come to the universe, read them there, and then get a real creative boost out of it and write for months.
Yes, do it!
Is there any place where people can find your work online, for instance?
There isn't, actually. I mean, I created a WordPress website, but I haven't uploaded anything yet, and yeah, it's not even a proper website now, and I'm a bit hesitant about sharing my works instead of writing on the internet. It still takes me some courage to even read them at the universe, and not knowing who might read them on the internet kind of makes me nervous.
I get that. Okay, Charlotte?
People know.
People know. They've heard before.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
They've also heard before that they can tweet at me, at Leo Engelmeyer, if they do wish to do so. This was episode 22 of the Universe podcast. If you enjoyed it and would like to hear more of us, make sure to subscribe to the Universe podcast wherever you're listening to it. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review to tell us what you think and help other people find the podcast. And you know what? Wherever you're listening to the podcast, just leave a review. Do it. And tell all your friends about it. Do that too. Comments? Questions? You can reach us on Twitter. We're @PodUniverse. On Facebook. Or you can just write us an email. podcast@universe.univ.org. This podcast was edited and hosted by Leonhard Engelmeier. The co-host was Charlotte Zerz. Our guest on this episode was Florentina Jungwirth, and on the editorial board for this episode was also Charlotte Zerz. Big round of imaginary applause. I hope you visit this planet and the universe again. In the meantime, stay safe in space. Thank you for listening. Now you can do the real applause.
Yay! One more episode. Finished.
Yes.
22 already.